This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Oh, this is the night. It's a beautiful night, and we call it a bella notte. Look at the skies, they have stars.
Place to Be Nation Pop, welcome back to Pop Goes the Classics. This is our Disney edition here on the Place to Be Nation Pop feed. This is a night, it's a beautiful night, and we call it bella notte. That's right, we are going to be talking about the classic Disney animated feature from 1955, Lady and the Tramp. I'm Andy Atherton, one of your co-hosts here on this wonderful podcast series. And let me bring in the other two, starting off all the way from across the pond and a little ways further, Miss Miranda Berthold. Miranda, how are you?
I am good this evening. How are you, Double A?
I'm very good. And it's very fitting that this is our February movie because this is a very romantic story.
It is a very sweet little love story.
Also joining us in the opposite direction from where I am, on the left side of this great country of ours, Mr. Steve Riddle. Steve, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Looking forward to chatting about this great, fun film when our main characters are not of the human type, right?
It seems like some of Disney's best movies are when the main characters aren't human.
Yes, we get to see their world, our world through their eyes. Like we said, we're talking about Lady and the Tramp. This is the 1955 great animated feature. We have a wonderful voice cast in this. More familiar voices. We have Barbara Luddy as Lady, our American Cocker Spaniel. We have Larry Roberts. He's a tramp, and he's a schnauzer mix of terrier ancestry. We have Bill Thompson as Jock, the Scottish Terrier. He is also voiced by, I believe, the same actor who did Mr. Smee in the last film. And we have Trusty, our great bloodhound, Verna Felton, as Aunt Sarah. She is known for so many great voices through the years. George Gaveau as Tony, the owner and chef of Tony's. Lee Miller as Jim Deere. He is the father figure. Peggy Lee, the great singer, she plays a couple of roles. She plays Jim Deere's wife, as well as Cy and Am, which are the Siamese cats, and Peg, the stray female Pekingese. That we meet along the way. We have Stan Freeberg as the Beaver. Alan Reed, the voice of Fred Flintstone, shows up as Boris. Thurl Ravenscroft as Al the Alligator. He is, from the Haunted Mansion, the Grinch, all kinds of great stuff. Dallas McKenna as Tuffy. And, we have a whole chorus known as the Millemen. So let's kind of talk about, though, our introductions to this film. And we'll start with Miranda. Miranda, is this something you saw at your grandparents' house as a kid?
It is, but I actually remember distinctly this one this time. My grandmother was very excited to show me this one. I was such an animal lover as a child, and I still am. So she was super excited for me to watch this. And the fact that it kind of was different. I had really resonated with the other female lead cartoons that she'd shown me, and so she really thought I would kind of feel that way again, and I did. And I remember having that moment with her, just kind of enjoying it and watching it together and spending time together. And it was fantastic.
Yeah. Steve, what about your earliest memories?
Yeah, so this was another one that I remember having on cassette when I was little. It wasn't one of those that wasn't, again, like a personal favorite, but I always enjoyed watching it when I was little. Kind of fell out of the loop as I grew up, and now with Disney Plus, I'm able to watch it whenever I want. I have it on in the background right now while we're doing this.
It's fun. I actually have it too. That was great advice by you. So it starts off on Christmas evening in the year of 1909 in a quaint Midwestern town. A lot of people think it was visually inspired by Disney's hometown of Marceline, Missouri. Jim Deere gives his wife, Darling, a Cocker Spaniel puppy that they name Lady as a gift for Christmas. She enjoys a fun life with the couple, and she ends up befriending two local neighborhood dogs, a Scottish Terrier named Juck and a Bloodhound named Trusty. So let's kind of talk about like some of the little things that, you know, Lady as a puppy experiences. You know, they obviously have never owned a dog before. That was one thing I noticed, that because they, oh yeah, she'll pipe down. Oh, she'll be quiet. No. You know, they give her, you know, coffee and donut for a dog, and she's a persistent little thing. What do you think of the introduction to the dynamic where they, you know, they kind of also foreshadow like nothing's ever going to change this. This is going to be perfect, basically. And the fact that it is dedicated this movie to all dogs, be it ladies or tramps. So, Steve, what do you think of the beginning when Lady, you know, the puppy comes home to her new family and is basically the child, if you will, in the beginning of the film?
I thought it was a good little showcase here. Obviously, you can tell that Jim Deere and Darlene were very, definitely inexperienced when it came to owning a dog. They definitely shower her with, you know, love and affection, but they obviously had not been around raising dogs before. Hence why when obviously in the middle of the night when Lady's trying to get attention and Jim's telling her constantly to be quiet, and eventually, you know, he tells Darling that they had to be firm with her and show that they're the ones in charge in the beginning, but then eventually they kind of cave and let Lady sleep on the bed, supposedly for that one night, but then as we find out, it ends up becoming 6 months as we see Lady grow into a bigger dog. I do find it interesting. So are we to assume that the last name of them is Deer? So would that mean Darling's, it'd be Darling Deer?
I don't know.
Or is Deer like supposed to be like Jim's middle name? Because we only hear him referred to as Jim Deer, and we only refer to her as Darlene. So I always found that
endearment. I think like he is Jim Deer, as in like Jim Deer, and I don't think that's his actual. I don't think Deer is their last name. I think that's just like their, because it's supposed to be kind of like a love story. So I think it's like Darling and Deer, basically.
Yeah, makes sense.
Kind of like Lady, Tramp, even though Tramp is derogatory, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're more like, yes, they're their names, but they're also kind of like pet names.
Yeah, they're more about they're not really names. They're just more of what they are, kind of literal. You know, this is Darling, this is Deer, this is the Lady, this is a Tramp, this is, you know, Trusty, this is John. They're very literal, these names, I think, in this film, except for, you know, the ant.
Right. It's just something I always kind of thought of.
Mm-hmm. And Miranda, as a fellow dog owner, you know, if you let a dog do something once, that's it, you're done. It's going to happen. As I look at my dog laying on my couch, which I resisted for many years. Yes. And now it's like second nature. So Miranda, what do you think?
Saying that my dogs I would never have a dog that sleeps with me, and all of my dogs for the last 15 years have shared a bed with me.
Yep. That's the one place I've been able to hold my dog off is the bed. But so Miranda, what do you think though of this opening where we get to meet Lady as a puppy and her introduction to the, you know, the family?
I think any of us could see this coming, especially maybe not when we were kids watching it, but now watching it as adults, any of us can see it coming. Like, oh, they're alluding to things will never change, and they are definitely changing and changing quickly. I think it was really good, actually probably pretty accurate interpretation of how things flow when you get a new pet, especially when you're not familiar with raising a pet before. So I thought it was really well done, and it's really adorable, and kind of like you want to be mad at them at some points because they don't understand what they're getting themselves into. And then once they did, they're like, we love her, but what do we do? Oh my God, but we love her, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we get a little glimpse into the dog world, I guess, so to speak, because when Lady gets her license and her collar, it's kind of a sign, I guess, that you're, you know, owned dog, I guess. You have a family, you have, it's a stature thing, I guess, that, you know, Jacques and Trusty, her older, you know, friends, I guess, I would kind of think of them like almost like her uncles, so to speak.
Yeah.
The relationship that develops with them, they look out for her, but they're not like, you know, part of her immediate family. So then meanwhile, across town, a stray mutt named Tramp lives on his own, dining on scraps from Tony's Italian restaurant, and he protects his feral strays. We mentioned Peg, a Pekingese, and Bull, a bulldog. He helps him get him out from the local dog catcher. And then one day, a lady is upset after her owners begin treating her rather coldly, that she just kind of doesn't understand. Jacques and Trusty come to visit her and determine that the behavior change is due to Darling expecting a baby. While Jacques and Trusty try to explain what a baby is, Tramp interrupts the conversation, offers his own thoughts on the matter, making Jacques and Trusty take an immediate dislike to the stray and order him out of the yard. He then, you know, as he's leaving, he reminds them that, you know, when a baby moves in, the dog moves out. So I think Tramp was burned by his, he must have had owners before. I mean, this is quite the beautiful neighborhood, a very well-to-do. We obviously, you know, see the other side of the tracks, literally. You know, is where Tramp lives on his own, and he's a dog about town, and Lady gets a little bit sensitive about that dog line, and I kind of love the dog's explanation of babies. So let's see, Steve, what do you think of, you know, we get really a glimpse into the dog world, the hierarchy, the kind of the class structure, if you will, and how they live and they're presented. And Tramp's kind of free, wheeling lifestyle.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely a good kind of, excuse me, kind of counterbalance between, you know, you kind of see the two different classes, like Lady, who's, you know, prim, pampered, well, sorry about that, you know, well taken care of, and then you have Tramp, who's the free roaming spirit, and you know, goes about, you know, it's like you said, dog about town. He's actually, you know, he's liked by Tony and what was the other guy's name? Joe, who, you know, gives him bones every time he goes by them, and he always makes sure that his fellow strays are, you know, kept safe. And I like kind of the dynamic between him against Lady Jacques and Trusty. And Jacques and Trusty are two of my favorite characters of all time. I really like the two of them, especially, you know, Trusty always, you know, trying to talk about his old grandpappy, old reliable. Like you said, their description of a baby. When I took note of it, was Jacques saying like they're very, very expensive. I thought that line was kind of pretty funny, because he's right about that. But yeah, definitely. It feels very you kind of could see, even though obviously films, the, you know, I definitely got a Dirty Dancing kind of vibe to it, even though this film was well before that film. Where you have like the street dog and Tramp and the prim and proper lady, and how they kind
of wrong side of the tracks, kid.
Yeah, you kind of don't see it at first, but they eventually come together, and, you know, as we'll see, they fall in love. I thought that was a kind of cool little dynamic that they took with those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely fun, and we also see a kind of like a throwaway. But then it comes back later on where Lady chases a rat out of the yard. You know, it's like, oh, she's just being a dog and, you know, chasing after another critter. But, you know, you can't forget the beady glowing eyes of this creature. And, you know, love how Trusty lost his sense of spell. And Jacques, you know, has the heart to tell him, to remind him that. At this time, at least. So, Miranda, where do you think when we meet Jacques and Trusty, we really get to know what's kind of going on, and Tramp's, you know, introduction as well?
I think it's a great introduction of who he is, his character, showing you that he's obviously in the dog world been through something before. Mm-hmm. I love Jacques and Trusty and like the dynamic that they kind of bring to the table and what we'll see from them later. I also find it really hysterical that in the dog world, they're like, oh, you have your papers. You have your, like, what is it? Now that you have, it's not just papers. What is it? We just said it a minute ago. I'm sorry.
Your collar and your license.
Your license. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, okay, so they see that as really big. And to us, we're like, oh, they need a collar and their rabies shot. Like, it's not that it's not a big deal, because it is. But, like, I think it's adorable that the dog world in this adaptation, in this cartoon, they think that's really important. That means mm-hmm. that you are actually have a loving, caring home, and that's what determines that, which is kind of sad and sweet at the same time. I also think showing Tramp rescuing the other dogs from the dog catcher really shows that, like, he doesn't want whatever was done to him to be done to these other dogs. And so he kind of takes them under his wing. Like, it shows you immediately that while he may be quote unquote from the other side of the tracks, he's a caring dog as well. So I really kind of like how they go ahead and basically break down who he is, what kind of demeanor he has, and where this is going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then eventually the baby does arrive. The couple introduces Lady to the infant, which is a boy, of whom Lady becomes very fond and protective. You can kind of see her being like a doting older sister there. And then Jim, Dear, and Darling leave for a vacation shortly thereafter. They put their dog-hating Aunt Sarah in charge of the baby and the house. Aunt Sarah's two troublemaking cats, which are Siamese, C and M, deliberately mess up the house, knowing Lady will get in trouble for it, and then get her even more trouble by tricking Aunt Sarah into thinking that Lady attacked them. She takes Lady to a pet shop to get a muzzle. Terrified, Lady flees the pet shop and is pursued by a trio of stray dogs. Tramp manages to rescue her, fighting off the vicious strays. So, this is where, okay, again, something we didn't mention, we get that disclaimer again about depictions and of a different time period at being in this movie, and this is probably the biggest reason for it, because the portrayal of C and Am, how they are very stereotypical of a Chinese, I guess, or of Asian culture at the time, with their way, their mannerisms, their way of speaking, their accents, and they're probably obviously not voiced by a actor of the actress of that of ethnicity, I guess. And, so we have a couple of things here, though. I mean, who plans a vacation when they have a newborn? That's one thing. I mean, I don't know if that was a thing back in the 1900s. She had some like serious cravings going on right before the baby was born. Aunt Sarah definitely is a cat person. The Siamese cats are you know, they're bad. They just want to cause some crap. That, you know, I didn't realize, you know, you don't realize that they own a bird and a fish that Lady is set out to protect. She's basically just looking out for the house. And then, you know, I love how Tramp, you know, finds his way and to the rescue and takes on three dogs to shoo them off. And that's where we're kind of at. So Miranda, what do you think of the, you know, the baby comes, you know, we have, they go on vacation. You know, mm-hmm. I have an issue with that part of the story. But then, you know, Aunt Sarah comes, which is, you know, with the bad cats, because we all know cats and dogs don't get along in the cartoons, right, for the most part. And then Lady gets into some trouble herself outside of the house.
So I may get hated for this, but the Siamese song was my absolute favorite song as a kid.
It's like a cute song.
From any, you know, Disney movie, I would mm-hmm. go around singing it all the time. Do you hear what I hear? A baby cry? Where are we finding baby? There be no bill by. Yeah, so like, and I also, what I do like about Aunt Sarah, I hate Aunt Sarah, but what I do like about Aunt Sarah is it shows those cat versus dog people. Mm-hmm. And like how, oh, cats, my cat does no wrong, which I'm not saying cats do wrong. I'm just saying, like, clearly I'm a dog person. I think it kind of lends to that whole trope, you know, dog people, cat people. Mm-hmm. I do really like the song a lot. Like it, I said, it is one of my absolute favorites. I didn't realize this whole time that they, it just says they go on a trip together, but I'm with you. Like, who leaves their infant child? So then they, there's some, I mean, obviously it has to happen to, because that's why the story plays out the way it does, but
it's a plot device. Yeah.
Right. I'm now with you where I'm like, this is a horrible plot hole at the same time. You didn't explain this very well to the rest of us that are now in-depthly going, why are you leaving your newborn and your dog home with your Aunt Sarah and her horrible cats? I have some concerns here as a parent, but I digress. So I think, it's setting it up for a perfect, I hate muzzles, by the way. I hate muzzles. This part made me cry as a kid, and I still don't like it. And it's funny that this is kind of, at the same time, what brings Tramp and Lady together. I don't know. I have a love-hate relationship with this whole part of the story, because, like I said, it brings forth my favorite song in most all of Disney lore. But it also is like, it's just horrible. It's just mean.
Yeah, exactly. Steve, what do you think of this sequence here where, you know, the baby comes, everybody's happy, they go away for some reason, and Sarah shows up and Lady gets herself into trouble in and out of the house?
Yeah, I like how it's kind of like going back to the prior to the baby being born. I liked how they had like the bachelorette party and the bachelor party in the same house, just like yes, different rooms. And you see Lady go into like both of them, like all the women are so happy, you know, like saying like, darling looks so beautiful, she's looked better. And then you go into the bachelor party and the guy's like, oh, Jim, I haven't seen you look this bad. You know, you look terrible.
Oh, like when they're having the party after the baby comes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah, see, it's funny you mentioned about how I always figured that they were leaving. I always thought that they left on a business trip. That's why they didn't take the baby with them. That was always kind of my understanding. But now that I'm kind of reading it, it says vacation. It's like, yeah, that is kind of like,
yeah,
weird that they leave their child behind. You know, it's kind of, unless, you know, it's like, who would do that? Who actually does that? And in terms of like, I'm guessing they, Aunt Sarah was like the closest person, like relative living by them. So that's why they end up calling on her. You know, maybe they didn't know she doesn't like dogs. Like they knew she had her cats, but they didn't know she didn't like dogs. And I agree with Miranda, them singing that song is like very, very, very cute. And it's like, you almost kind of want to like them, even though you know they're there to just cause trouble. And you do feel really bad for Lady. Like she's just trying to, you know, protect everything. And then the cats, you know, make it seem like, you know, she attacked them. And that little part where like, where Sarah's carrying them up the steps and then they use their tails to like shake hands behind her back. Like job well done. It's just so, it's like little sly. And then you've again, feel bad for the lady getting that muzzle put on her and, you know, her end up, you know, running away from it and just happened to, you know, find Tramp. And what do you guys, I've always wanted, what do you think of him constantly calling the lady Pigeon or Pidge? Yeah. That kind of a weird nickname to you?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Again, you know, like we talked about with Codfish, maybe Pidge was something back at that time that was like a term of endearment, maybe. You know, instead of calling
her that due to her naivety. She's very naive about everything in the world. And so I guess from my understanding, Pigeon, or Pidge, which is short for pigeon, it's how pigeons are kind of like never paying attention to anything. They only see what's right here, you know?
Yeah.
That
could be just maybe just, you know, something he just calls people. You never know. You know, sometimes people have a certain vernacular that they like to use. Could be. So she's got the muzzle on. You know, Tramp saves her upon seeing the muzzle. He offers to help get it off. They sneak into the local zoo, which I think is a very fun sequence with all the different animals trying to figure out which is the right animal that's going to take off this muzzle or help you. And they he manages to trick a beaver. It was a fun minor character with an interesting voice, with because, you know, he has the beaver teeth. He has to kind of whistle through it, which we kind of hear this voice again later on with the gopher that shows up in Winnie the Pooh. Mm-hmm. But Tramp really has a line of BS. I mean, he can really talk. What's the old thing? You could sell water to a sailor or something. I don't know. But yeah, he could definitely, you know, talk his way in and out of anything. And he tricks him into thinking the muzzle is a log hauler. The beaver then helps get the muzzle off and uses it to finish his dam. He then takes Lady to a restaurant named Tony's, where we've seen him already. But this time, the owner, Tony, and his cook, Joe, prepare a meal for the two dogs, which is one of the probably cutest, most romantic scenes in any animated Disney film. We get the classic dinner, and we starting to learn a little bit about Tramp and his past, with kind of, so to speak, being a man about town, where he's had several female dogs, I guess, that have caught his eye. But even Tony says to him, this one's different. You should keep this one around. And he serves them not bones, because this is not what we need. He sets a whole plate, a whole table. We've got candles, and they give him a bowl of spaghetti. And we get the Lady and the Tramp, as we call it in my house. We like sometimes my daughter will do that with the dog. She'll have a big long thing of spaghetti. She'll throw it to the dog, and he'll start eating it. She'll do it. She'll pull away before they meet. But we call it Lady and the Tramping, and then the whole thing with the sharing of the last meatball is a very iconic and sweet scene. So, Steve, where does this rank in terms of romantic scenes in Disney films?
Oh, it's definitely up there. I mean, you could honestly say it's probably one of the most iconic scenes in any Disney film. Going back quickly to the scene of the zoo, I did feel kind of bad for that that poor chap that got harassed by the cop, because Grant made it seem like he was his dog, and no dogs allowed in the zoo, and then that guy just got completely harassed by the cop when he really did nothing wrong. I thought, felt bad for him.
It's a good old Irish cop too. You don't see a lot of those now anymore.
And then them going through the zoo, and almost they try to get the alligator to do it, and he nearly bites Lady's head off, and then they come to the beaver, and when you see the beaver, you can definitely tell he was a dead ringer for Gopher in the Winnie the Pooh, just with the voice and everything, and then them selling him the muzzle as a log puller, which they do it just as a gag, and then it ends up working perfectly, so the beaver got something out of it in the end. And then, like you said, them going through town, and Tramp, talking about his lifestyle, then going to Tony's, which when you think about it, it's like they're Tony and Joe are focusing on their time on, on the two dogs and making sure they're all set up. It's like, don't they have a business to run? It's like I can't imagine if they actually have any customers, and it's like, why is my food taking so long? And like, oh yeah, we're just helping out two dogs behind the restaurant.
Maybe it's late at night when they're closing, or they haven't had any business, and they're like, oh, this is a nice little ending to the day here.
It could be, but yeah, you're right. It's definitely in terms of as a scene, it's definitely one of the most, if not the most, romantic scene in Disney history. And I'm sure you talk to a lot of people, they'll probably tell you the same thing. And then coupled with the song Bella Notte, one of the most memorable songs in history, it's like the perfect romantic scene, if you will, for a Disney film.
Yeah, and it can definitely tell us a lot of turn of the century or early 1900s here, because a lot of immigrants too. We have the Irish cop, we have Tony's restaurant, a lot of people with accents, the German, as well. And Tramp, every my notes is bad. he's getting a reputation here, but they call him Butch at the place. So Miranda, where does this rank? He helps her out getting the muzzle off. They have a little fun at the zoo. They end up, you know, at Tony's for a romantic date. How much, you know, what do you love about this so much?
So I love the zoo sequence. I think it's really fun and introduces you just to other little creatures in the animal world and how they kind of all intermingle. And I thought it was adorable. The spaghetti sequence is fantastic. And I think everyone as a kid, even though you were eating spaghetti alone, you still tried to, like, you know, do the spaghetti yes. thing because of this movie. And I think it's probably one of my favorite. I do agree that I think if it's one of the most iconic, if it's not the most iconic, when you're talking about love story sequences in a Disney film, I think it's fantastic. And it clearly has resonated even within Disney themselves, because they've redone different versions of this in parody form numerous times. It's been done in Lilo and Stitch crossover episode. It was done in Kronk's New Groove. The live action Underdog film did it, between Underdog and Polly Purebred. Phineas and Ferb had a version of it where Balzhee and Buford kind of shared a scene in Italy. And then at the end, of course, Buford just throws the spaghetti at Balzhee. But it's been redone a lot of times. Gravity Falls, Mickey Mouse.
Hot Shots. So
clearly, yeah. So clearly, like, even Disney themselves have thought that this was good for them. Like, this was a good scene. And I think that's what's cute, is that most people, even if they haven't watched Lady and the Tramp, they know about the scene. Everybody pretty much does.
Yeah. It is so much fun that, you know, we lead off here. You know, after dinner, they stroll through the night and they fall asleep at a local park. When they awake, Lady is upset for not going home right away. Tramp then tries to open her eyes to life without leashes and fences. However, Lady feels a responsibility to watch over the baby at home. Tramp then takes her home, but along the way decides to have a little fun by rousing up a hen house that he sees. When the owner appears with a shotgun, Lady and Tramp make a run for it. Lady doesn't get very far when she's caught by a dog catcher and taken to the pound. Once inside the pound, though, she is ridiculed for her license and cleanliness before another female dog named Peg gets everyone to stop. Talk then turns to the tramp, who still hasn't been caught, and to Lady Shock, appears to have known quite the number of female dogs. So we go from Lady getting smitten in the scene outside Tony's to getting, you know, having one of the most traumatic experiences of her young life. I really love the dog pound scene, though, because, you know, the shadows of the bars, they kind of look like prison stripes on the all the characters. And then we get quite the, again, racial stereotypes here. We have a Russian dog. We have a Mexican Chihuahua, a British Bulldog, no pun intended. The German Dachshund. I know Steve got that. Thank you. The Dachshund and all that stuff. And how basically Peg does the he's a tramp song, which is another fun song and iconic from this movie. And they talk about the long walk, which is something no dog ever wants to take. And Tramp's past comes back to bite him, so to speak. So Miranda, we get them together, but now we pull them apart after, you know, she's kind of exposed to the shine is taken off the tramp, I guess. She kind of sees some of the things about him she may not have known before.
I think that just goes to show, like, his nickname for her and how he thinks she's naive, and she is. I mean, I guess it would be the difference in, like, a feral dog and a house dog. Like, they're going to be two different creatures altogether. And that's kind of what she's been thrown into. She is a dog who is well taken care of and groomed and cleaned and loved and watched after and allowed on couches and beds and has this family and this warmth and this comfort. And she is always fed. And then you get into an entanglement that causes some problems. And suddenly you learn how dogs on the street and those that don't care and they don't have food and they don't know where their next meal is coming from. And I think it's a shock. So not only is she getting that shock, but then she learns that, like, he's a smooth talker with all the ladies because he's lived on the street. He does what he has to do. And smooth talking apparently is part of it. And that's a hard realization. So it's kind of like the real world, and I think it's a lot of kind of foreshadowing of the real world. So like you come from this home where like you've known great things, you've always had food on your table, and next thing you know you're in college and you meet this smooth talking guy or girl, and you like fall into this hole and you're like, oh my God, what have I got, like I should have listened, what have I gotten myself into? And it's kind of the same thing. I mean, in a lot of ways it's kind of the same thing, and she's stuck because there's no out from this, you know, not at this moment, not what she can see. And, you know, as the viewer, you're also like, oh, crap. You know, what's going to happen?
Yep. Steve, what do you think of this turn of events with between Lady and the Tramp and Lady's incarceration, so to speak?
Yeah, definitely kind of served as a wake up call for her, because she has been, like we said, been so used to being taken care of and living in her own house, and now having to be stuck in this basically, like you said, a prison with these other dogs is, you know, definitely a traumatizing experience for her. And, you know, like you said, the dogs kind of rag on her for being domesticated, but Peg kind of reminds her, you know, hey, that's, you know, that license, that's your ticket out. You know, you're going to get out. And it just happens to be around that time when we see the one dog, like you said, taking the final walk, if you will, towards his demise. And, you know, and then we get kind of another very memorable song when Peg sings He's a Tramp, kind of talk about his past dalliances. But it is, you know, it does make you kind of, because, you know, to this point, you know, Tramp's been kind of presented as, you know, a likable guy. But then we kind of hear about his, what he doesn't talk about, tell Lady, you know, kind of realize, you know, he can be kind of a douchebag in a way. You know, he's not who we thought he was. And, yeah, it's just one of those kind of having this right after that, you know, that romantic scene is a definitely a major kind of transition for the film, in my opinion.
Yeah, Tramp definitely hides stuff or keeps stuff from his past, you know. But I think something I think he realizes it too. Something different about Lady. You know, I think he's not looking to con her or have a short, quick thing with her. You know, he really seems to care about her. Like, there seems to be, you know, you see stars in her eyes, and I think you see it with him, too. You know, he's aware, though, of who he's very self-aware, knowing that, you know, yeah, he's a stray, basically. And he, you know, how can he get his way into, you know, convince her to kind of join him, you know, giving up a lot of very cush lifestyle is not easy for her. So Lady is eventually released to Aunt Sarah, who then ties her up in a doghouse out back. Jacques and Trusty come over and hoping to cheer up, but the mood is then spoiled when Tramp appears. Jacques and Trusty leave, and Lady lets her pent up emotions out on him. From the embarrassment of being put in a pound to hearing about all the other women that Tramp has been with, he then leaves, and Lady's attention is soon drawn to a rat that we saw earlier that she sees enter through an open window in the baby's room. Lady barks, trying to get Aunt Sarah's attention, but the old woman thinks that it's just Lady making a racket. Tramp hears the lady, and after she explains what happened, he enters the house, making his way to the baby's room. He confronts and fights the rat, finally killing it just as Lady arrives after freeing herself from the leash. Aunt Sarah finds them in the room, but she thinks that they were intending to attack the baby. She locks Tramp in a closet, and Sarah puts Lady in the cellar before calling the pound. Yeah, this was a very, you know, harrowing scene, I guess, because this rat is meant to be scary. And there's really no true villain in this film, I guess you might say. The rat is kind of... Well, we could say Aunt Sarah. Yeah. I could even say Cyan Am, but you know, like, there's no central villain. How's that? Mostly, there are antagonists in this movie. You know, the rat, the cats, and Aunt Sarah. But you know, this is probably the scariest sequence of the whole film, because you don't know what the rat's gonna do. You know, or you know, bite the baby. You know, claw the baby, whatever. And you know, Tramp, you know, gets in there and comes to the rescue, and you know, of course, you know, being a stray, an outside dog, gets kind of you know, stereotyped, I guess, or you know, she kind of assumes that he does wrong. Steve, where did this sequence land with you, with the you know, Lady and the Tramp kind of having to you know, Lady kind of has to put her differences aside, and Tramp, you know, does the right thing here, but they ultimately pays the price.
Yeah, you can definitely it's definitely interesting, because at first, like you said, Lady is now kind of cold towards him and kind of calls him out on his past that relationships, and he you know, for once has no like response to her, and you know, she makes a, you know, she's basically like, I don't want to see you again. And then she sees the rat go in the house, and you know, then she kind of realizes Tramps are only you know, the only one that can help him. And it does kind of suck that when Tramp finally kills the rat, it happens behind a curtain, so they can't see it at first. And Aunt Sarah's just under the immediate assumption that both of them attacked the baby, and she puts Lady in the basement, and then has Tramp impounded. And it's definitely a very really dark scene, especially for Disney at this point, because you haven't had a lot of really dark scenes at this point, and it really kind of amps the tension up to kind of the final climax of the film that we'll talk about here in just a second.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, what do you think of this harrowing sequence?
Well, I thought it proved that Tramp did feel different about her than, you know, like we had spoke to just a few minutes ago, that for once he did feel different and she wasn't just one of the other women in his life. Because actually in the book version of this film, there's kind of like a subplot going on, and it does kind of talk about his pursuit of other female dogs, and it's written out kind of a little suggestively inappropriate for young readers. But so it is present, and that's what they're trying to convey, not as it's supposed to be like, we know it's there, like it's behind the curtain there, like the rat, it's behind the curtain there. Mm-hmm. And not really talked about, but it's understood that that's where she's going with this. I think it's really good because it's what was needed, because she was at this dark place, which again, there's another dark place happening here, being thrown in the cellar, and the adults, the real humans, not understanding what was going on, because it's really easy to misconstrue something. Especially like, I know, and you'd probably be the same if you walked in and that you saw that and saw your baby, you'd be like, ah, and you'd probably lose it. I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's the sequence in the scene that was needed to make things kind of move forward, because you don't want to just end on like, hey, he saved the rat, this is amazing. Like, it's not going to be that simple for him. His life has not been that simple. So.
No, things have not worked out for him.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I know firsthand. I mean, you know, my cat, my almost now almost 20-year-old cat was very protective over Jessica when she was a baby. And, you know, that would concern, I think, people at times. But, you know, he would actually literally get into the crib with her and curl up next to her, and they would sleep butt to butt when she was a baby. So, and then sit on the stairs. If somebody was in the house that he didn't know and she was upstairs, he sat on that stairs. And if anybody went near there, including my grandmother, he meowed quite loudly at him. So, you know, pets can get wrongly accused quite often. But continuing with the story here, shortly thereafter, Jim Deere and a darling, they return to see Tramp being led away by the dog catcher, claiming he attempted to attack the baby. Trusty and Jock hear this and assume that the worst as well. Mm-hmm. However, once Jim Deere looks in the baby's room, he finds a dead rat, and it's soon apparent that Lady and Tramp were both trying to protect the baby. Jock and Trusty rush off to stop the wagon before it reaches the pound. After spooking the wagon's horses, the wagon overturns but ends up injuring Trusty. So, yeah, this was a, I guess, our climax of the movie, where, you know, Tramp finally gets caught and he's headed to the pound, where he will most likely go on the long walk. And this is where Uncle Jock and Trusty really, you know, come in to help save the day. And we get, you know, Trusty, you know, Jock has to painfully and doesn't want to say it. He's like, you know, you've lost your sense of smell, man. We're not going to fight it. And he's like, nope. And, you know, Trusty sticks with it, and eventually they catch up to the dog catcher, and They in an attempt to stop it, though, you know, we see that Trusty is injured badly. We don't know how bad. We don't know if he you know, may have died trying to save the tramp. Miranda, so Jim and Darling come back, and they kind of, you know, see what's really going on here, and we get, you know, the true protective nature of Jacques and Trusty, you know, where they care about Lady so much that if for her to, you know, for Tramp to have come in and he showed how much he cared that he's maybe not so bad, they attempt to save his life. What do you think of this whole sequence?
I thought it was fantastic, and I think it did show what we thought all along, is with this, they really cared about her, and that they were kind of like, as Steve said earlier, kind of like the adoptive uncles from next door, which happens a lot in the dog world, especially, like, obviously I have two dogs now, and neither one of them are from the same litter, and they're different ages, but they have, like, melded together and made a family. And so I think that's what you've seen take place. They've melded together, and they've taken her under their wing, and they adore her, and now they just want her to be happy, and they realize, oh, everybody misjudged and made a mistake here, and there's really only one way to change this in their minds.
Mm-hmm. I think that this is... this resonates so well with people, this whole dog family, so to speak. We are going to see this in a couple of films actually coming up. 101 Dalmatians and also the Aristocats have a lot of, glimpses, I guess, into what we think the dog world is like. Steve, what do you think of this heroic rescue attempt?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's definitely good timing that Jim Deere and Darling just happened to come home just as they're taking Tramp away so that they can find out what happened. And once Jim lets Lady out of the basement and she leads them upstairs, you know, kind of petty on Sarah to immediately think that Lady's going to go back after the baby, but Lady's really just trying to show them the rat. And then that's when Jock and Trusty kind of realized they were wrong about Tramp and they decided to save them. And kind of a cool little moment there with Trusty, you know, the whole time you think he's lost his sense of smell, and then it turns out he didn't, and they're able to find the carriage and end up saving him. And kind of a scary moment there where you think Trusty ended up getting killed by the carriage falling, and that moment there where Jock, you know, mourns the loss of his friend, because he's always kind of had this weird kind of relationship with Trusty where he kind of feels like he's the responsible one of the group of the two, but you're unsure like how he really feels about him, and you kind of see this little moment here where he did care, you know, he does care about him, and he is genuinely, you know, sad when he thinks that Trusty dies. I thought that was a nice little kind of touchy moment there for those two.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, you could actually say you think they come off as like best friends, I guess, so to speak. I mean, but they're like an odd couple. So it's a fun relationship that they have. So then time passes, and soon it is Christmas again, and we see Tramp, now wearing a collar and a license, has become a member of the family, and he and Lady have puppies of their own. Jacques and Trusty, with a cast on his leg, come to visit them, all as well, and they celebrate the holidays together. And one fun little touch I saw, that Aunt Sarah sent some dog biscuits, so she has come around as well to be a dog lover, or at least loves those dogs. And it's a very cute ending to see, that they start their own family, and that Tramp has, you know, not only does he have his love, though, of his life, that he has the thing that he's always sorely missed, a loving home. Steve, what'd you think of this little button at the end of the movie where we see kind of how this turns out?
Yeah, I thought it was nice to show that that Tramp has been, you know, has been welcomed by the family, and we see that, you know, he and Lady have their own family. It is kind of funny that they have four puppies, and like you can tell who, like, which gender they are, because the three girls look like Lady, and then the woman boy looks like Tramp. And like you said, yeah, that little note that it was Sarah who sent the dog biscuits. I think it was more kind of an apology, her way of saying, I'm sorry for accusing, the two dogs about hurting the baby. And one of the funny parts is, Jock comes in with this, Jock has this really nice plaid sweater on, and the tramp puppy just wants to just kind of grabs at it and then unravels it constantly, much to Jock's annoyance. But yeah, it was a nice little scene. And then to kind of close out, Trusty wants to tell the puppies about, his grandpappy. We've been hearing all throughout this whole film about what old Reliable used to say, and now the puppies want to hear it. And he's like, well, doggone it, I just forgot what he said, what he always said. I thought that was kind of a nice little touch there. But yeah, it was a fine little scene to close out the film and kind of circle back to where we started. We started on Christmas with Jim giving a lady to Darlene as a president. Now we kind of come full circle to it being Christmas again, and now they're a whole big family.
It's a lot of dogs.
Yes.
Yeah, we had growing up, we had two pointers that had ended up having five puppies. We ended up giving all the puppies away, but having seven dogs in the house was quite the thing. Miranda, what do you think of the ending of Lady and the Tramp?
I love the ending. I think it does a wonderful job of not only closing it out, but coming full circle. I really like that Trusty has essentially become Old Reliable himself. He doesn't realize that until that moment, and that's when he's like, oh crap, I am the old guy and I can't remember anything. I love that Tramp has come full circle as well. He obviously, we still don't know everything about his past, but he came from a home at some point, maybe. Or maybe he never had one. And either way, he has it now. And that collar and license is, all his. And I think that is really awesome, because I prefer to rescue dogs. And so I like that Jim and Darling also came around and decided that rescuing and adding to their family was what was needed too. I guess they could truly see how much Lady really kind of cared, because dogs do care for one another. So apparently they saw that and decided to allow him into their home. And I think it's really sweet. And I think it's fantastic. Just well done movie.
Hmm. Yep. So that's the end of this story of Lady and the Tramp, but there are others. They're like we talked about, last episode, there was a direct-to-video sequel, Lady and the Tramp 2 Scamp's Adventure, which I believe is the one puppy that looks like Tramp, the boy. I might have seen it when my kids were little. I don't remember it. Have either of you seen that one?
The Scamp? The Scamp's Adventure? I vaguely remember it, so I don't know if maybe I watched it when I was younger and I was babysitting, because that was I used to babysit a lot, or if maybe Caden watched it, I really don't know.
Steve, have you ever seen it?
I have not. Many of these direct to video films I've not seen.
Yeah. I mean, the only ones that I remember seeing were the Aladdin and Lion King ones, because I was such a fan of the first movie, and I just wanted more of those stories. But also, I have not seen it, but it's on my sort of not high on my to-do list, but it's something I would like to check out, was the live action Lady and the Tramp that came out on Disney Plus this past year. Have either of you guys seen that one?
No, every time I go to turn it on, I don't, I'm interested in it, but at the same time, something just has kept me from watching it. I don't really know what it is.
Yeah. It's also 2 hours too. It just, ooh. Yeah. Cause it like, on a lot of streaming services, Disney Plus, I just had Lady and the Tramp on. It just ended, and it says, because you watch Lady and the Tramp, you can watch Lady and the Tramp. And I'm seeing the runtime is an hour and 51 minutes. So, there's a lot of great stuff out there right now to watch, especially during this time, and there's so many hours in the day. It's just like, this is not high. I would love to be able to just sit down and watch it one day, but it just hasn't struck me. Steve, have you seen this one?
I actually did see it. It was one of the first things I actually did watch after Disney Plus launched. I thought it was okay. I mean, it was pretty much what you would expect from a live action remake of this film. There's a, you know, there's a few things in it that are a bit different, but you know, for the most part, it was fine for what it was. I think they were smart to put this on Disney Plus and not do a theatrical release of it. I don't think it would have done too well in theaters. Mm-hmm. But I thought for what it was fine. It was a good little thing to kind of help launch the streaming service, kind of hook people in.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, it looks cute. Like, so I mean, like, it's like, but for me, is it like high up on my list? Not Ed Reinhardt? No, it's not. But it's like, if I'm like on a plane, like I'm a captive audience, I will definitely turn it on or something like that. That's kind of how I feel about it. So in terms of the parks for Disney, there's not a lot of Lady and the Tramp present because you really can't really do a ride on it. But there is Tony's Town Square in the Magic Kingdom. They actually have the paw prints that you see in the movie. You can actually take a picture with that. I have eaten there. The food is good. I went there when my daughter was 4, and it was a long day, and proceeded to have about a half an hour to 45-minute meltdown, which was the same moment in time that back then they didn't serve alcohol in the Magic Kingdom. That was about the time that her mom found that out. So it was really great timing for me. But it is a fun restaurant though to go. It's right at towards the entrance of the Magic Kingdom. So I would recommend it. It's not, you know, it's Italian food, but it's more about the setting, like most stuff. And if you want to see, you know, they do topiaries every year and at the Flower and Garden at Epcot. So you'll see Lady and the Tramp represented there, as well as the Pop Century, which I did stay at in 2000, in the same trip, 2008, I believe it was in. No, it was 2006, because it was the year before Dylan was born. There's a giant lady statue in the 1950s area. So, Miranda, have you ever been to Tony's Town Square?
I have not been to that one.
No, okay.
We picked very specific places to eat while we were there. And then we cooked, too, because we got a off-property house with our other family. So, yeah.
Steve, have you ever been to Tony's Town Square?
Don't think I have. If I have, I don't have too many memories of it.
Yeah. No, it's a fun restaurant to go to. So, all right. So that's going to bring a close to this. And so coming up in our next episode or two, we go back to the princesses. That's right. It's Sleeping Beauty. The wonderful tale that came out in 1959. And shortly after that, we get back to the dog world in 101 Dalmatians. So, before we go, though, let's kind of just talk about where everybody could be found on the social networks and other podcasts. Steve, where can people find you?
Well, you can usually find me over at placetobenature.com. I have several articles that I have dropped fairly periodically. I have the Vintage Vault previewing, where I take a look at one match from the specific show that the boys at the Place to Be podcast, Scott and Justin, are doing from that show. I also have the box office report, where I take a look at the figures from that specific month from 10 years ago. So I'll be looking at February 2011 at the end of this month. And I also am doing what I call the Wonderful Lists of Disney, where I'm basically going through and ranking various categories from what I have compiled from watching all the Disney films the past year. I'd be ranking all the heroes and princes, the princesses, the villains, the songs, and the films. So that will be periodically, because there are a lot to rank. So I got all that going on. You can usually find me over on Facebook. I'm typically over at the Place to Be Facebook page. Plenty of discussions going on, lots of questions, tournaments periodically. And that's usually where I'm at.
All right. Miranda, where can people find you?
As always, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter as Mom's Nerd. I do run the Geek and Sassy Instagram page and the TeleNT Instagram. I'm also in the Place to Be Nation group, where we all kind of chat and converse together daily. So that's where I can be found and bothered. And then, of course, be sure to check out all of my shows and send me ideas for new shows. I love those, too. And just don't leave us, basically, is what I'm saying. Don't leave us.
Yes. Share some spaghetti and meatballs with us, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
yeah, as for me, you can always find me here on the PlayStation Pop Feed with lots of fun and great shows. That's Laugh and Theater, Making Mount Rushmore, Blockbuster Rewind, Great Debate, lots of other fun things we have here. On the PlayStation Wrestling Network, I have Great Debate Wrestling and Evolution. And don't forget, check out everything that we have from all the feeds, all of our associates in this big family. That is the North-South Connection podcast feed and the Jenny Position. Great content on both. Don't forget to check out PlayStation.com each and every day with all the links for all the pods, as well as lots of great articles like Steve had mentioned. And don't forget, and also join us, the Place to Be group on Facebook. That is the place where Steve said, we have all the tournaments, the questions, great interaction, lots of fun, lots of good people. If you're into wrestling, it is the home for you, and we have lots of pop culture mixed in there. And just, it's a great community that has really made a comeback, one of the positives of 2020, so to speak. So I want to say a big thank you, though, to Steve and Miranda for getting together with me once again to talk about Disney films. And this was 1955's Lady and the Tramp. For those of you out there, thank you for listening. And we'll check you out on the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Wish that I could travel his way. Wish that I could travel his way.